et al. In the case of both parties. On behalf of the appellants, Kellen Willert is present, will be arguing. And on behalf of the appellees, Robert Anderson is present, will be arguing. Each side will have 20 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Willert, you'll have a 10-minute rebuttal. You may proceed with your argument, Mr. Willert.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kellen Willert, and I represent Justin Bahn, Tammy Bahn, and Brenda Vasknetz, the appellees in the cases before you, and they are present here in the gallery with us today. I'd like to begin by fessing up a little bit, and with all candor to the court, footnote 7 on page 9 of my initial brief in Bahn 1 is no longer accurate. In that footnote, I represented to you that I was unaware of any other 15% thresholds for petitions. That has since changed. I found a handful. Most of them seem to relate to city and county government, for example, local option for city-owned liquor stores and a municipal retirement system. The crux of this case really is whether or not an unelected bureaucrat has a discretion to forego their ministerial duty to certify signatures on a petition and instead act in a quasi-judicial manner to insert their subjective opinion to independently adjudicate a petition to be invalid without providing any due process. And that's why this case matters. It's no secret that the confidence in our institutions has been on the decline. And I think that was pointed out in Chief Justice Jensen's State of the Judiciary message just this year when he indicated that the rule of law is designed to protect our citizens, maintain order, and restrain governmental power, and that it should be applied consistently and equally to all in order to produce a safe, peaceful, and orderly society for everyone. In Federalist Number 22, Alexander Hamilton, when trying to persuade others that the new Constitution was better than the Articles, stated, quote, "Laws are a dead letter without courts to expound and define their true meaning and operation," period, end quote. May 1st was Law Day this year, and the ABA's theme was Cornerstones of Democracy, Civics, Civility, and Collaboration, and it was really focused on rebuilding trust in our institutions. There are many that distrust our institutions for a good reason and a lot that don't really have a good reason to distrust our institutions and are unruly and illogical people. That's not what you have before you today. What you have before you today is a group of concerned citizens that gathered, got together and gathered nearly 20% of the electorate's signatures on a petition. They used the proper framework that our institutions provide for, and they did so in a very patient manner. They were met with a city government that forced them to endure very public backlash and ridicule while continuously moving the legal argument goalposts. The appellees' actions in this matter and their reactions to the petition gives this court an opportunity to act on Chief Justice Jensen's State of the Judiciary message by applying the law, upholding the rights of the people, and polishing the public confidence in our judicial system by holding governmental officials accountable for their ministerial duties. In this case...
Counsel, so the lawsuit is not just against the finance officer. You also named as defendants are the rest of the city council, the mayor. Is there a difference between the duties between the city finance officer and the city council with respect to this type of petition and the discretion that either may or may not have with regard to the substance, the legal question with respect to the petition?
Yes, there is, Justice DeVaney. The Truman v. Grice case cited at 2009 SD 8 defined what a ministerial act was. And included in that, it was a certain and imperative execution of a specific duty, defining the time, mode, and occasion of its performance with such certainty that nothing remains for judgment and discretion. In terms of the finance officer, SDCL 9-20-4 would be applicable, wherein she had the obligation statutorily to certify the signatures, and if there were enough signatures, then present the petition at the next council meeting. That did not happen.
So that's... Go ahead.
Tell us about the interplay of the ARSD that's been adopted that gives her the responsibility, the person receiving the petition, the responsibility for determining whether it's in the proper form.
Justice Myron, the Anderson v. City of T case cited at 2006 SD 112 made it clear that the ARSD is applicable to municipal elections, and I cited some of the applicable ARSDs here. I'd like to begin with 5:02:08:00(1), which requires that the forms prescribed by the ARSD be used. There is no such form for a city manager petition. The closest there is the form of government, and that's what was used in 2007 as well as now. And then in terms of the ARSD requirements for Ms. Bueno, they're very specific in what she can and can't, well, what she is supposed to do. And that's essentially verify the signatures. And if you look at the bottom, I believe it's 5:02:08:00, and this is in your appendix in Bond 1 at page 46 and 7. I believe at the bottom it indicates that a municipal finance officer doesn't even actually have to check whether they were registered voters. But basically, she is supposed to look at the petition, ensure that the addresses are complete. I think that's outlined in the Larson case. And then she chose to verify the amount of registered voters. We still don't know that number. We know it was over the 15% threshold, but they still won't tell us.
Is she required to determine if it's in the proper form? And is she required to look at content?
No. I believe she's required to look at whether it's in proper form, as in each petition being front and back, and that the addresses are complete. In terms of whether she's supposed to look at the content, I think the Larson case is very instructive on that, where in Larson there was a challenge to whether or not the signatures substantially complied, and the court held the finance officer has no authority to determine whether it's in substantial compliance, just to look at the form and whether the addresses are complete.
Does it matter to your answer, Mr. Willard, if rather than a 9-11-5 or 9-11-6 style petition, the authority is a 9-10-1 sort of petition?
You know, I think the petitions are the same. The only real differences are when that election has to be held. I believe I briefed
this. In terms of the ministerial character of what the city finance officer must do, does your answer change if the source of that authority to petition for, you know, changing or doing something vis-a-vis the employment of the city manager is sourced to 9-10-1 as opposed to the 9-11 statutes?
I don't believe that her job changes, really. We know that the threshold is 15% regardless of which statute. Her job was to certify the signatures and then deliver that to the council. I think then if the council decided that they wanted the court to weigh in on whether it was valid, so to speak, then they could do that. But that would afford my clients their due process.
So that was my question. So is what I understand you saying is the finance officer had no discretion to not accept the petition and forward it on to the city council, but you are of the view the city council could have then sought an opinion from a court or the Board of Elections or whoever that might be as to the validity of the substance of the petition, whether it was seeking a change in the form of government.
Yes, Justice Devaney. I think the council or even other citizens could have brought a writ of prohibition, perhaps. But the bureaucrat's ministerial duty is to count the signatures and forward that on. Are there any other questions as of right now?
Well, the statute says that upon receiving the certified petition from the finance director, the governing body shall schedule an election. You think that includes some sort of decision-making function that they would employ before deciding that they shall forward it?
No, Justice Myron, and that actually helps me loop back to Justice Devaney's prior question on the ministerial duties of the council. Absent them seeking some court intervention, I think they are obligated to then schedule the election, whether that court intervention is sought by the council or another citizen.
So here what laid out, and so this is where I'm also kind of trying to wrestle with what do we do with the way it's postured now. So the there was a request for an opinion from the Board of Elections that then got abandoned after this lawsuit was filed. And so do you think that question was now properly before the circuit court here with kind of how this unfolded? And do we address that merits question in this case?
Well, I'd like to add a bit of clarity. The Board of Elections doesn't make those types of determinations. They make determinations on the forms and the petitions.
And I'm just talking about what steps actually occurred here, whether it was proper or not, but we're dealing with now what was before the circuit court that is now before this court. Is that question properly before this court now?
I don't think it's a question that you need to weigh in on, but contextually, I think it's important for this court to consider. And the timeline here is very important for the court to see just how the appellees decided to use an ends justifies the means approach to this petition. In January of just this year, this court weighed in and said that practitioners don't have the liberty to flirt with the ends justify the means mentality. And I submit to you that should apply to our local governments as well. Sturgis's actions took an ends justify the means approach with the petition by continuously relocating the goalposts. That even started before the petition was even filed with the finance officer in November of 2021, when the secret city manager contract addendum was executed. That was provided to us the day before the February 2022 hearing pursuant to a subpoena. In paragraph 5 of that addendum is important. It starts out with, quote, if the city residents vote to return to an aldermanic form of government without a city manager. And then it goes on to end that the core function of the chief executive officer remains the same. It was clear that the appellees wanted a certain person to continue operating in that function under whatever name, and even if the city manager office was terminated, they would still have this person operating as CEO or chief executive officer, which is absurd because SDCL section 9-8-1 specifies that would then become the mayor in a straight aldermanic form of government.
Can I take it back to one topic that we were just discussing? What's the source? I want to make sure I've got your argument. What's the source that you would rely upon? Let's just theoretically say this is a 9-10-1 petition. And maybe it always should have been, but let's not worry about that. Let's say this one really is better viewed as a 9-10-1 decision and an opportunity for the citizens to weigh in on whether the city should employ a city manager or not. The statute doesn't really say hire one. It says employ one. So I don't know if that matters or not, but let's say that's what's going on here. It's 9-10-1. What's the source of the finance officer's ministerial duty if that is the source of the citizen's ability to either do away with the city manager position or keep it?
I think the sources of her ministerial duties remain the same under SDCL section 9-20-4, as well as the ARSDs previously.
That statute discussed. Applies to petitions for initiating measures.
Yes.
Is this one an initiated measure?
Well, I believe it's an initiated measure. The appellees assert that the 2007 petition was an initiated matter, and those petitions are the same, essentially. Ours is a bit broader. Our petition actually included the phrase "and other applicable law." And it's important to look at as well 9-11-5, I argue to you, is the operative statute for both 9-11-6 and 9-10-1.
Are you actually initiating, forgive me for interrupting, are you actually initiating an ordinance or are you just sort of directing how city government should proceed?
I think it would be granting or withdrawing a special power to the government in order to operate under a city manager form of government. And when I look at petitions calling for elections, I view them as either an initiative or a referendum. And it's not a referendum here. And importantly, in Bond 1, the summary judgment motion was based on that this is not a referable matter. The appellees later admitted that, okay, yep, it's not a referable matter because it's not a referendum. So the way that I look at them is, if it's not a referendum, then it must be an initiative.
Okay, I've got your... Thank you very much.
Going back to the timeline, in December of 2021, there was a city attorney report that was released, apparently that was requested by the mayor and finance officer to assess the propriety of the question. Again, this should not have been done before Ms. Bueno certified the signatures, but it also begs the question, if that was true, that the analysis was based on the propriety of the question, then where did the investigation go? Where did that come from? Why were they interrogating signers of the petition and doing handwriting analysis? It was clear that at the point this report was released, that the signatures on the petition had already been heavily scrutinized. They talked about 10 instances of multiple signatures by the same person, even indicated that the petition contained a forged signature.
Counsel, I mean, I understand your concerns about that, but that was not the basis for the circuit court's ruling. So how does that impact what's before us right now?
I think contextually, it's important so that this court can view everything in a holistic manner, looking at both Bond 1 and Bond 2. But I can move along, Justice DeBene.
Well, mandamus writ is a laser beam. I mean, it is precise.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
And, for example, they first argued that we were arguing that the city managers, they were saying a city manager is a person, not a form of government. And that goes against everything they've done for the last 15 years. That goes against that contract addendum, and it also goes against some of their statements before the circuit court or the trial court. For example, in the February 14th, 2022 hearing, their counsel said at page 31, lines 20 to 21, quote, the purpose of this petition is to eliminate the office of city manager. And then they went on to make a whole raft of different claims, confusing the issue. And again, their motion for the summary judgment was based on that petition being a referendum. And as I briefed, that motion for summary judgment was then moot. It didn't matter. We should have proceeded with the mandamus proceeding. And that's besides the fact that summary judgment isn't even an appropriate or available remedy in a mandamus proceeding. And I understand that this court has made decisions regarding summary judgments in other mandamus proceedings, but to my knowledge, that issue has never been raised, and I think that the statutes are very clear on that. If the question is one of law, then you proceed with the mandamus hearing, which is exactly what we wanted to do.
If you prevail, in order to prevail, I'm asking what precise relief you want each action from this court.
I think the best and most logical relief, Justice Kern, would be in Bond 1 that this court modify the lower court's judgment pursuant to SDCL Section 15-26A-12, issue a writ of mandamus for Ms. Bueno to certify the signatures and tender the petitions to the council and for the council to schedule the election. In Bond 2, we have the standing issue is really the big issue. And what I would request is that this court find that my clients did have standing, at least on the declaratory judgment action, and that they had standing in the quo warranto action, and it was inappropriate for the court not to grant leave. So in Bond 2, I would just simply ask that this court remand Bond 2 and that then that be resolved in front of the trial court in accordance with Bond 1.
Yeah, is there a live controversy? If you win in Bond 1, is there a live controversy in Bond 2?
No, Justice Salter, I think that we would be able to dismiss Bond 2. But, you know, going back to the Chief Justice message to the judiciary, I think it would be important for this court to weigh in on whether or not citizens have standing under the five different arguments that I presented to you.
We typically don't render advisory opinions. But I hear you.
In Bond 2, quo warranto is one action. Declaratory judgment is another cause of action. You were seeking the exact same remedy in both actions, correct?
Well, they're similar but different, Judge or Justice Myron. The quo warranto would be the writ saying you are not entitled to hold this office because it doesn't exist. The declaratory judgment action would simply be a declaratory judgment saying the office doesn't exist. So I think they're very similar, but they do have some distinguishing features. And I see my time is almost up, so I will relinquish my space here.
Thank you, Mr. Willard. You may proceed with your argument, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court, if it pleases the court, and Mr. Willard, my name is Rob Anderson. I represent all of the respondents in both Bond 1 and 2. And to start, I want to say I respectfully disagree with how Mr. Willard described the crux of this case. The crux of this case is not what he described. That's not the issue for the court to determine. And I don't disagree with the aspirational things that he talked about in terms of faith in our government. That's why we're here. There's two very distinct issues before the court, and that is, did the circuit court act appropriately when it dismissed the mandamus action? That's one. Second, did the circuit court act appropriately when it dismissed the quo warranto action? That's number two. Both these issues are extensively controlled by statute. The statutes have been interpreted in many contexts at many times by this court and others. I do want, however, to start with the mandamus question. The petitioners have always argued that there's absolutely no discretion in this case with anyone. That includes the city finance officer and the city council. That once you get a petition, any petition, you've got to certify that petition and hold an election. And you can't judge the form or the authority under which it's filed. That's their argument. So if this petition had said, we want to change the form of the city government to a single executive autocratic form of government, and here's the petition, and the signatures are all valid, and there's enough of them, and you need to have an election. Would they have to have an election on that? According to their theory, they would. The reverse is, what if you went pursuant to SDCL 9610, I have the wrong statute on the form of government change. It's 9116. Yep, go ahead.
Wouldn't the certification then go to the city council for them to take the appropriate steps that they deem?
Both, but here they were all sued, and they're all sued alleging that they have no discretion.
But if you have no discretion, you have no discretion. But it's a question about what is the discretion that the finance officer has? Where does the source of her discretion, and what's the nature of her discretion?
There probably isn't a clear statutory basis for her exercising the discretion of saying, hey, I went to the city attorney. He says this is improper form. It's not a proper petition under the authorizing statute. It almost comes down to a common sense thing. I agree it's not precisely spelled out, but to contend that an election has to be held on any petition under any circumstances is not the intent of the people who authored Title IX, I'm quite sure, although I will admit that Title IX is plenty confusing.
So the finance officer never delivered this petition to the city council?
No, but it was
so,
just...
So did the city council have any function to perform?
As far as I know, they did. I wasn't there, but I don't know that it's in the record, but there are reports in the record indicating the delivery of the city attorney's opinion to both the finance officer and the city council. And, of course, the city attorney's opinion meshes with the circuit court's decision on both the mandamus issue and the quo warranto issue.
So it seems like, you know, one of the arguments here in reading the circuit court's opinion is that it seemed to go right to the merits question and not really address the discretionary versus ministerial duties and such. And one of the things I've been wrestling with is, so if we look at this and say, as you are advocating here, there was a discretion from either or both of the, either the individual or the body that was sued, do we then go on and address the merits question as postured in this mandamus case before us?
I mean, you mean this court?
Yes.
No, and that goes back to Mr. Salter's question to Mr. Willard. That is, if you win bond two, what happens? Well, if you win bond two, this court, I assume, would say, yes, you had standing to pursue the quo warranto action. And yes, you also had standing to pursue a declaratory judgment action, then you'd have a trial on that issue. I don't think this court would have the power to do anything other than rule on the questions presented.
So the circuit court, did the circuit court then go a step too far in ruling on the merits and maybe lose focus of what was the mandamus question? Because that was the ruling of the circuit court.
I understand what you're saying. It's hard to really distinguish the procedural posture and the merits in a mandamus case because mandamus is so narrow and the issue to be decided is this public official going to be ordered to perform a particular function?
It's probably a poor choice of term.
That's a hard example. It's easier in bond two to discuss that. Mm-hmm. Another point that was raised by the commission and the city finance officer in bond one was the statute by which the citizens, the petitions proceeded, was a statute specifically conferring authority on the voters to petition for a change in the form of government. A lot of our brief is dedicated to that because this is extremely important. The form of government is not a city manager. The form of government is one of the three forms acknowledged, the aldermanic being a version of the city council, or mayor-council form of government. So you have a petition filed under authority which permits someone to change the form of government. Doesn't permit you to fire a city manager or do away with the city manager's office. That is not what it permits.
Does Mr. Anderson, does Section 910.1 then, in your view, apply only to hiring a city manager?
It
does not apply to terminating one. And I realize that wasn't what they used in 2007.
I think this is exactly what it does, Your Honor. It empowers the city council to appoint or employ a city manager. It doesn't mandate that. I think in practice, if a petition such as one in 2007 was favorably voted upon, the city council would have the power to choose not to appoint one, but they would have the power to appoint one, whereas they would not have the power if the voters didn't approve it in that fashion.
So is that the sole authority providing the city with the authority to hire a city manager? Is that the only way you can do it? Or can it be done, as appears was done in this case, through the other statute?
Well, it wasn't. No, in this case, it was done pursuant to the statute which authorized the vote to empower the council to employ a city manager.
So what about the text that says in 910.1 that says that the citizens can request or have an election or request that an election, here's the quote, be called to vote upon the proposition of employing a city manager?
Yeah, I think that's what it means. It means the proposition.
Just hiring one?
The concept.
Not continuing the employment?
No, I think the decision not to continue the employment is very, this is one area where there's a statute in Title IX that's very clear, and that is only the governing body, the city council, can terminate the city manager once he's hired for that spot or appointed.
Does that deal with just the particular person or the office of city manager itself?
Deals with the person.
So, because I think that's your opponent's argument, is that, well, this isn't what we were doing here. It wasn't about the person. It was about the creation of the office itself. So if the statute allows or the city the authority, and essentially maybe creation is the wrong word, but the authority to have a city manager, is there no authority then, in your view, to allow the voters to remove the city's ability to have a city manager?
It's a good question, but I think it's fairly clear when you read and harmonize all these statutes that the answer is the governing body has the authority to then choose not to employ one or to repeal the ordinances if they exist to create the office.
Well, that would seem to subvert the will of the people. If the will of the people decided that we really want to have a city manager and then we were to hold that, yeah, but it doesn't really much matter because the governing body can do whatever they want anyway, then you're just having an advisory election.
They can have another. An advisory election is probably what you would get in some statutes, not here. I think it's clear the governing body has the sole power to discharge a person holding that office. And it also has the power to repeal the ordinance which would establish and empower the office. Or it has the power to choose not to exercise the power given to them by the people.
So your argument then would be that these statutes don't do any more than that. And if the governing body says, yeah, we're not going to hire a city manager, even though that's what the citizens want, citizens can vote those members out at the next election.
And these three petitioners, I think, knew that full well. I don't know what they knew or what prompted them. They all three ran for office, presumably to accomplish this very thing. Then they got beat. The way to do this is to run for office, get a majority of people who agree with you, and vote. That's representative government.
So the legislature would go to all this trouble to have a statute that says, there's procedure, here's a process, here's the authority for the election, and you can vote on the proposition of employing a city manager, only to have the governing body say, "About heck with it. We're not going to do it."
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing your position to be, and I just want to make sure that I'm hearing it right, that the citizens can petition for the authority for the city to hire a city manager, but citizens cannot petition for to take away that authority.
There's no provision for it, and the municipalities as entities have only the power that the legislature gives them. But the legislature gave the voters the power to create the office, or empower the better choice words, empower the city council to create the office and hire a person to fill that office. But there's nowhere where it creates the power to eliminate the office other than getting like-minded people elected to the board, to the city council, and changing it. I don't think that's unique in representative government at all. Otherwise, you would have town hall government like they have and still have in some small New England towns where every single person shows up in the auditorium and gets to vote on every question. I want to go back to kind of the relationship between a couple of the questions that were asked about this, about the employment and termination of a city manager. Let's just assume that this proposal, this change in government petition had been approved, submitted, and voted on affirmatively. The petitioners admit it would not change the makeup of the city council. Doesn't change the form of government. You have a city council and a mayor before the vote. You have a city council and mayor after the vote. Of course, that's central part of our argument, is the election was meaningless because it did not address a change in the form of government. But let's assume it got voted on and it passed, and you had a city council there that was very sold on the utilization of a city manager. And they said, yeah, the people voted to switch forms of government, and we think it's improper, and the city attorney tells us it's not proper form, but it had to be submitted to the people, but we're not going to fire the city manager, and we're not going to do it. So what would you do? I think you'd have a bigger mess before this court if that happened than what we have now. The due process rights conferred by that statute attached to the individual holding the position, and you end up with the same government, the same council that you had before. I mean, I think a good city attorney would tell a council in that situation is, this is what the voters say, but they didn't change the form of government, and you're the boss.
The city initially pursued a declaratory judgment action and had it in front of the state election board on the precise issue that you are identifying here today, and then withdrew it. Pardon Tell me about and then withdrew the that request. Correct?
Yeah. As far as I know, I didn't participate, and I don't know the history of that. But I know it was submitted because I've read the petition to the Board of Elections.
Okay. Finish it.
Can you go back to that "you're the boss" statement that you just made? The city council's the boss, and what was the... I'm sorry, I was...
I don't think anybody would ever use those terms. Those are my terms here. Yeah.
But and what was the... What, and your thought was that the city... Why was it the boss? Just
okay. The city council is the same council that hired and appointed the city manager.
Yeah.
The petition is voted on and passes, but it doesn't change the government. It doesn't change anybody on the council. The council goes to the meeting and talks to the city attorney and says, do we have to terminate this guy? Is he automatically terminated? He hasn't done anything wrong.
I see.
So we're going to keep him.
And
now, what's before you are the two very narrow issues that I mentioned before, and that is mandamus, which is a very narrow, precise remedy, which requires the petitioners to make the argument they do here, and that is you have to absolutely have no discretion. It has to be a performance of an official act that is mandated and you can't get out of. Their theory of this case would not permit discretion to be exercised even in a common sense manner so as to avoid the futility of having an election that would cost money and accomplish nothing.
So, and I just want to, maybe I keep asking the same question here, but I want to make sure I'm clear on your position. If we decide that was a discretionary matter, then does this court, with what is currently in front of us, answer or address the question of whether the circuit court properly found that this was not a petition asking for a change in the form of government?
I'm not sure I really understand your question. One is, I think it's clear that this is not a petition that seeks a change in the form of government. There are three forms of government. Their own petition says we're going to have the same form when this is done as we have now. So I think that's a moot question. It's a kind of a red herring. I think, however, are you asking what power this court would have to take any further action?
Well, because the circuit court's decision addresses this question of whether this is was properly submitted as a petition for the change in the form of government.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Rather than asking the question of is the remedy of mandamus something that could be sought here if it was a discretionary determination made. There was not a clear legal duty to submit that petition.
I think had the petition been different, the answer would be they could address that. You could address that. If the petition in its form, I don't think it's something you can address. I think you'd have to rule that mandamus is improper as a remedy here.
What about the heads we win, tails you lose argument that is this estoppel-style argument? You did this in 2007, and we can't do it now.
Well, the action taken in 2007 was taken pursuant to a statute which was specifically required to get authority to hire a city manager. The petition in 2021 or two, whatever that date was filed under the form of a petition for a change in form of government. I think those are... I'm looking for the statute, 6 and 10.
So the 2000, I was thinking, I was trying to make sure I was saying it right. So the 2007 one cited 9/11/5, change in government.
Yep. 2007 one? No.
You mentioned that earlier, and my memory was different, so maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
That's the change of
government.
That's
the change
statute.
Of government one.
Okay. That was. Yes.
So it wasn't a 9/10/1 statute. That's what their petition looked like this time. It was a 9-11-5.
They were different.
9-11-6 statute. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think they were, how were they different?
They were the same.
I think they were the same.
I've got their statute or their petition here somewhere. They filed under 9-11-6. 9-11-6 is the change in government.
Yeah, but 5 launches the succeeding statutes.
Yeah, but they weren't the same statutes, and they empower the entity differently.
Okay.
They give different powers to the municipality. 11-6 and 11-5 are different. 11-5 establishes a government, allows the voters to submit that.
Let me ask the question this way then. So was the 2007 petition that cited 9-11-1 correct, or was that improvident? Should it have cited 9-10-1?
Might have involved an unfortunate choice of words, but it wasn't incorrect. I think the terms form of government have been misused all over the place in both case law and these statutes. Form of government as defined by the statute, however, makes it very clear there's three forms. And a city ad manager is not a form. It is an agent or an employee or a professional manager to assist the governing body. That's the difference. But no, the authorities relied on in 2007 and 2021 are not the same.
Thank you.
I don't want to waive any of the arguments I've made anywhere else, but we have to cover a lot of ground, and so I want to make sure that the court will consider those arguments as made in our brief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Willard, you may proceed with your rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I want to start out just by reiterating that the petitions used in 2007 and in this case are indeed the same, but for our petition that is actually more broad and includes that phrase and other applicable law. If we have this much difficulty between attorneys and justices deciphering what is what, imagine being a layperson trying to fill out a petition and participate in our government.
Yeah, but so I was kind of curious to get here. So your petition cited 9-11-5 and 9-11-6. Am I remembering that correctly?
And other applicable law. And I would also submit to you that when we liberally construe the petitions, when we look at the NIST case, the right of the people to be heard on legislative issues of the day should be maintained, and pursuant to SDCL Section 2-1-11, the real intention of the parties should not be defeated by mere technicalities. And then I would refer you to, in Bond 2, the Appellees' reply brief in support of their motion to dismiss. This is found in the Bond 2 clerk's record at page 334 on page 8. And this is what the Appellees said about the 2007 petition. Quote, any erroneous references to a different statute and using the term form of government do not impact the underlying substantive intent of the petition and election. Any reliance on these erroneous references elevates form over substance, period, end quote. The trial court in this matter asserted or indicated that he thought the liberal construction only went to the signatures, and I believe I briefed and cited that. When we're looking at the summary...
So can I interrupt real quick?
Yes.
So what you're saying is, look, they want liberal construction for their petition way back when, yes? And we should have
yes.
it now. Okay, I'm with you. I see what your argument is. But let's say you win on that, or let's say that's persuasive. And really, using form of government and citing 9-11-5 may have not have, in retrospect, been exactly on the mark. But there was a statute, 9-10-1, that does allow the voters to weigh in on the proposition of employing a city manager. So it does seem like there's authority. Are you with me so far?
Yes, I believe so.
And so if there's that liberal construction, then they didn't do anything that was totally out of bounds. There is a statute, 9-10-1. It's not the one they cited, and it may or may not be a form of government, but it does allow the city voters to weigh in on that determination. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then is it and then if you want the same sort of treatment here, hey, look, don't hold us to 9-11-5 or anything. We've got these other applicable law references, and you need to liberally construe it, and they want that too. Okay. So you have to win on the form of government argument, or we could construe yours as a 910-1 and read 910-1 as the proposition of the employment of the city manager to mean not just engaging the city manager, but also whether to continue with a city manager?
I'm not sure I'm quite following now.
Yeah, I was good. Right,
I apologize.
No, but I mean, that's if you want liberal construction for the source of your petition, what if we review yours as a 910-1?
And I think that would functionally be just fine, Justice Salter.
But doesn't that hurt your ministerial duty? But I suppose that laps around to your 920 argument about initiatives.
I think the ministerial duties don't go away. And I think that's a very important and good part of our infrastructure to not allow unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats to make these decisions. That's why it's a ministerial duty.
It seems to me that stretches liberal construction awfully far to change the actual statute cited in the petition into a different statute. But let's assume that premise for a moment. Mr. Anderson argued that even if your petition was under 911-1, that statute only gives authority to authorize the hiring. It does not give the authority to authorize the firing. And he suggests that the only source of the authority to fire lies with the city council. Tell me your position.
My position there is that the phrase, the proposition of employing, that what that means is whether or not to employ a city manager. And the statutory scheme restricts a subsequent election for at least a year. So the code acknowledges that we can have multiple elections on this issue, and it's really the voters granting the city a special power, which the appellees acknowledged all throughout our briefing, that this is a special power. And under Article 6 of our Constitution, Section 1 states that the government derives its powers from the consent of the governed. If the citizens can grant this power, they can take the power away. Does that answer your question, Justice Myron?
It sure tries.
That was a great question, is what I was driving at. Justice Vanney asked this question about, is there a difference between the office holder and the creation of the office? Is that what you're kind of
upon? Yes, there's absolutely a difference between an employee holding the office versus the office itself.
Do you agree with Mr. Anderson's argument that if there was a 910-1 election, that the city, the governing body, and the council could do whatever it wanted to, either employ one or not employ one after that? At least that's what I heard.
I disagree with that. I think the council would then have a duty to implement that infrastructure, form, scheme of government, call it what you will.
The legislature seems to be on your side. 910-3 says that if it's passed, the city council, the governing body, shall employ a city manager. If it doesn't pass, there's a moratorium or waiting period or something like that, and then they can circle back around again. So that seems to suggest that if it doesn't pass, they can't. Would you agree with that?
Correct, Justice Salter. And I think it's also important to look at it the other way. If we had the 2000 Section 7 election and that was valid, the voters couldn't bring another petition to do away with that for at least a year. And so that the statutory scheme works both ways. And I also want to be clear to you that I'm not submitting to you that our petition here is valid and Sturgis's petition is invalid. Either our petition is valid and the 2007 petition and election are valid, or neither are valid. But contrast that with Appalese's position. They think that 2007 petition and election, which was unequivocally and expressly a vote to move to the city manager form of government, they say that's all fine. But the petition here, which used the same process as in 2007, is invalid. And again, I circle back to the ministerial duties. We still have not been told how many valid signatures were on that petition, just that we've met that 15% threshold. And we didn't get
question.
To...
Can I ask a standard review question here really quick? And it kind of strikes at your summary judgment authorized in mandamus actions argument. We review them differently. We review a summary judgment grant de novo as a matter of law. We review seemingly decisions regarding whether to grant a petition for mandamus writ under abuse of discretion standard. strange because the ministerial duty contemplates no discretion. What's our standard of review here?
I believe you accurately stated the standard of review, Justice Salter, based on the case law.
But I don't know what it is. Is it abuse of discretion or is it de novo? Is that what you say?
Yes, on the mandamus, I believe it's abuse of discretion. And I apologize. I thought I had briefed that. I'd be happy to brief that after this. Summary judgment is de novo.
But this is summary judgment for a mandamus petition. So now what do we do?
Well, I think the best thing to do for this court is to exercise its authority under SDCL 15. I apologize. I lost it. 15-26A-12 to modify the lower court's decision and just issue this writ of mandamus. We're already well past a year when this election should have been had. We're 5-6 months past when oral arguments were originally scheduled for bond one. We simply ask this court to give them the relief they seek and essentially save them from the judicial whipsaw that they've been exposed to here. And I'd like to briefly just touch on some of the statements made by opposing counsel. In terms of discretion, the statutory authority or authorities cited include the word shall. And I believe I briefed this, but when shall is included in a statute, that's a mandatory directive. That is not discretionary. And I disagree that if someone brought a petition to change to an autocratic form of government or a unicorn form of government, that would pass muster. However, if we're looking at what we're looking at and liberally construe it, then it's obvious what the intent of the petitioners was.
So how would it happen then? So if that petition that Mr. Anderson described was brought forward that said some clearly illegal form of government, what's the process, the appropriate process to challenge it? Does the finance officer then look at it and have the discretion to say, oh, you can't do this. The law doesn't allow this.
If I were the city attorney and I could be pointed to a statute that shows me the threshold, I would ask the finance officer, validate the signatures, whether or not there's enough, and then take it to the council. And then I would probably recommend to my council that they bring a writ of prohibition or some other deck action to the circuit court to give those petitioners at least some semblance of due process. And that might be a little burdensome, but here we had, everyone knows what we were talking about. Sturgis, for the last 15 years, every year passed a resolution that acknowledged that it was under the city manager form of government.
So just procedurally, how would it have happened in your mind that in the theory? So they would have, the finance officer would have authorized or verified the petition, then the city council would have scheduled an election and filed a declaratory judgment action, or filed a declaratory judgment action and said, we're not following the statute, we're not doing that shall and scheduling the election. Which way does it work?
I think they could work it either way, and perhaps the best way, as you saw with, I believe it was Amendment A, was to go ahead and have the election and then challenge it on the tail end. That was the Tom case, I believe. I see my time is up, but I'm happy to answer any further questions you may have.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. Both appeals are now submitted to the court. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.